Hi folks, this is Martin and you are listening to Kaput Radio. Today's presentation deals with addiction, a special analogy of our total dependency on debt for all our needs to survive in any society of any country in this world. As in the world of drug dependency, prohibition of the state introduces a nasty element of scarcity. In the world of the debt economy, the prohibition effects are automatically built in as the scarcity of debt money and additionally the need to get the desired fix in the form of profit is all too apparent. It is amazing what other analogies can be found in the analysis presented here. Welcome to Victim Addictum.
Victim Addictum. This talk is about what we actually do, not about the things we'd like to do, not about our idealisms, those laudable concepts of ourselves as a caring, nurturing, thinking species, superior to those other animals. We know all that, yet we still yearn for a sane civil society where our moral and ethical ideals can be implemented. No, this is all about what we must do, and that is obey the rules that apply to living as an addict of debt. A drug probably more powerful than the drug ice. Imagine having to be consciously aware that we are not only victims of debt, but addicts in the true sense of the word. We are users, craving ever more injections of debt finance just to keep our heads above the slough of recession. Despondency occasioned by that realization would be difficult to bear, so we cling tenaciously to our assumed humanity. As addicts, we've become the victims of debt and the inhumane methods we must use in obtaining it. In its basic form, the debt is most unstable, but the euphoria we seek is from the debt derivative called profit. This is made from a form of debt that has first been acquired by someone else. Debt is not only costly and hard to obtain, it is the only form of finance from which profit can be made. It is our only globally recognized, must-have, standard form of financial currency. Like other popular drugs, profit must be cultivated, and it has to grow. Unless profit has sufficient growth, it does not give the needed satisfaction. So, whatever corruption is involved, the requirement for its growth must be fulfilled, regardless of unsustainable global outcomes. As addicts, profit is our lifeblood. As addicts, without profit, we become agitated, angry, deprived, and depraved. Certainly, even our economy withers, and then we are nothing. Profit, once obtained, must be kept, not in the safe or the fridge, but in a constant state of growth. The satisfaction we get from debt and profit growth is only temporary. So, the stressful struggle for more and more continues unabated. Profit's most sought-after effect is our spending ability, our income, our livelihood, and it all stems from growing profit. Ah, yes, like other popular drugs, it is grown. As it is, debt profit without growth is unable to keep pace with its yesterday's value. As its addicts, we are forced to fight and compete with each other, and with nature, to secure our prized but oh so scarce debt, in complete disregard to its consequent social and environmentally toxic effects. Unfortunately for us, there can never be enough access to our debt of choice, profit. Debt's important byproduct. Profit is the derivative we crave. It is our must-have ingredient to satisfy our physical demands. As addicts, access to it means the difference between immediate success or failure in life. In this present era, debt finance is controlling more than just economics. It's here, it's there, it's everywhere. The dictates of the debt economy, that is. It's the government, the corporations, the culture, and everything else that matters, such as you and me. And it's totally faceless. It's a machine, a method, It has its own logic. And no matter who or where we are in this sad monetary strategy, we have become part of it. We are its victim. We are long-term thinkers doing short-term projects. We're trapped on a conveyor belt of debt-derived profit, heading to be dumped into the global wasteland of wasted human potential. The most saddening aspect of all is that we unwittingly installed this debt system and have continually supported its disastrous rules of engagement while remaining witless. Witless, that is, of its very nature as a basic cause. Or is it just willful blindness, a result of debt addiction? We've allowed ourselves to be constrained and conditioned by a system, by a method, for heaven's sake. We continue as its willing participants, believing that monetary scarcity is good for us. Good for us? Oh, yes, it helps build character and makes us strong competitors and aggressors, don't you know? We've perpetrated this most unfortunate era of error, this period ruled by a particular type of finance, this economics of economy, for far too long a time. It has been and still is a time that's sparing of spirit, frugal of kindness, stinted of humanity, thrifty of generosity, stunted of tolerance, austere of acceptance. All this is coupled with a massive desire for change, plus a blind credence in a non-existent or constrained democracy. It is a time that's most economic of, no, totally devoid of, any curiosity as to what lies behind our dysfunctional attempts at resource sustainability. The very nature of this type of finance precludes any practice of or realization of those humanitarian ideals that we most fondly cherish. So the possibility of putting our humanity into practice dissolves into fantasy. It's a fantasy we all need, though, as it keeps us from looking squarely at the horror of what we are actually doing to our world. Horror is normally a strong term, but in this context it's rather a weak description, because of how we treat our fellow victims is beyond horror, auspices of our debt of choice. A coherent cooperative existence within our debt-driven global economy is not feasible. Tolerance is precluded, mainly by the competitive economic activity needed for profit growth in all arenas of commerce. Businesses and industries must compete against and eliminate their competitors for a place in a tight and closely guarded marketplace. The need for ever greater production at ever lower production costs and lower wages leads to the misuse of just about everything and alienates exploited workers. Knowledge of these parameters permits precise calculation of export profit and distribution within marketplace populations. So the need for competition, divided into two fundamentally different parts, produces both social and economic conflict within nations and between nations. We pay lip service to our unattainable idealisms and try to keep them securely anchored and safely harbored away from reality. Actually, self-delusion is particularly important when, as individuals, we are confronted with the recent sufferings of millions killed, being killed, mutilated, wounded, or displaced, or the billions of our less affluent neighbours burdened with outrageous poverty. Outrageous because there need be no, and at present there is no, shortage of food or other goods, only money. And so millions go hungry. Outrageous because of debt finance's scarce money deficit system that prevents two-thirds of the world's population from accessing the necessities of a reasonable living standard. An unreasonable mortality standard is what they are left with. Outrageous because wars and the consequent arms sales are a global economic necessity. We place our arms around the world as we pray for peace. But the peace we are really after is a peace of the profit. To keep the developed world's economy afloat, wars are essential. They are fomented to support our massive international armaments industries. Just as profit must continually grow, wars must continually escalate. Whenever any shadow of doubt as to our species' general humaneness flickers across our intracranial hemispheres, all we do is trot out well-polished, well-honed examples of our superior status among the mammals. This concept of ourselves as exemplars of our humanity is precious to us. But alas, as always, debt and profit scarcity prevents us from ever realizing that future memory from the past. Instead, us developed folk compete for and conceive of the poor as a bankable resource. Their poverty makes for cheap labor. We pay lip service to the World Trade Organization and pretend to believe when it tells the poor, globalization will bring you prosperity. Our lips plead with whoever we imagine is in control of finances for adequate funding to combat climate change and soil degradation. Big budgets to restore waterways and reefs and do some reforestation would be nice. Non-governmental organizations plead with everyone for adequate or even inadequate funding, just some funding. Our academic think tankers talk of economic downturns, of inflationary upturns, and the ghosts of global financial crises, past and present. Economists advocate austerity or stimulus spending, depending on the organization employing them or who their target audience is. Economic reformers plan for change and speak of effective models and measures that never affect any change at all, unless perhaps it's the constant change and variability in the debt system's boom and bust cycle. Exactly to whom are we indebted within the debt money system? It's not the bank reserve or otherwise. Banks are indebted to the borrower for the asset which was created by and from past debt on the basis of a former asset, and so ad infinitum. Is there an end to debt? Can there be an end? So, if once installed as a means of exchange, is it endless? Are we forever indentured to it, obeying the rules to which every individual and community is reliant upon for making a living? Third world poverty and slave labour manufacturing together make up a twin set that afford the affluent the affluence arising from the availability of affordable white goods, clothing, cars, and food, primaries, etc. The poor work long, hard hours, manufacturing the made offshore merchandise, the goods we can't afford to make or to buy back home because of higher wage costs in our more developed part of the world. But in what other sense are we more developed? Can be difficult to answer. Some pose the question, have we in the West developed at all? Well, probably physically in comparison to some undernourished, underdeveloped populations existing well below the poverty line, but developed upon the lines of our treasured humanitarian ideals? Think again. They are but a Disney fantasia of our unfulfilled humanitarian moral code, made impossible by our addiction to debt. It's a wonder that even those humanitarian delusions haven't already been completely eroded. Certainly pragmatic cynicism in some circles does already seem well entrenched. Among the general population, humanitarian ideals act as a buffer against the harshness of reality under our debt system, posing as a monetary system. People's well-being and environmental sustainability are secondary considerations in our competitive, combative, debt-addicted culture. If a revival were called for, maybe the revival of the sapiens bit of our genus Homo title would be a good idea. That bit of our title seems rather neglected. Debt reform leading to a sane monetary system with counselling for us, debt and profit addicts, could well bring some salutary effects. Maybe a cost-benefit analysis of the debt system could bring a dawning clarity as to why
our human potential has not been realized. Is there, perchance, a rehab facility for debt and profit addiction?
Thank you for listening. You heard a presentation by Len Martin, performance poet and addict to debt, written by Graham Ferguson from his series of writings about our finance system and also addicted. I'm Martin Jansen, producer of Kaput Radio and, of course, addicted to debt, just as you, the listener, are. If you'd like to find more Kaput Radio, simply Google Kaput X Radio, Kaput spells with two T's, mind you, and there you will find a considerable collection of shows, all free to download and all created in our addictive economic environment. Otherwise, you can hear me with more Kaput Radio next time.